everyone. I'm Josh Nunn.
I'm Justine Hall.
And I'm Crystal Kessler.
And welcome to this edition of Millennial Mondays, where we explore interesting topics, trends, and key drivers inside one of the world's largest living generations, millennials.
On this month's Millennial Monday, we're talking about retirement. So this can be a kind of confusing topic with a lot of acronyms and jargon. And I know for me, at least, it can feel kind of nebulous. I know I need to be contributing to an account, but it's hard to imagine what my life will look like when I'm about to retire, which I think is sometime around 2060. So kind of hard to picture what my life in the world will be like in 2060. But Crystal, Josh, and I are going to explain some of the things that we think are most important to consider when you're planning for retirement, and hopefully help make saving for retirement a little bit clearer, less confusing, and provide some pretty good tips to set yourself up for success later in life. So we asked on social media, and everyone should follow us at Financial Sense on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all the fun things. But we had a question that someone said, how am I supposed to be saving and how do I figure out what that number is? Everyone's lifestyles are different. So how do I know when and what to save? Which I think is a pretty good question.
It's a great question and probably one of the most popular questions you get when we start talking about the topic of retirement.
Yeah, it's kind of like, okay, you have your first job and, you know, you finally have a salary. And so everyone says, okay, contribute to your retirement account, your 401k. What if your job doesn't have one? What if you have an employer match or not? There's so many questions to answer. And so just as a starting point, there's a great chart that was done by Merrill Lynch that we'll link out to on financialsense.com. And it shows a few scenarios of what your savings at age 65 mean for your annual income in retirement. So it says that if you had saved $300,000 in your account, in your retirement account, means that your annual income from that savings, so spread out over the course of your life, right, will be $12,000 a year. So if you have $300,000 saved, that'll equate to $12,000 a year. If you have $1 million in your account, your annual income from those savings would be $40,000 a year. And if you have $1.5 million saved, your annual income would be $60,000 a year.
Yeah, so I think it's really important to really evaluate what you're spending now and what you can potentially live off in the future to kind of determine what you think you need to save. And I feel like it's very individually specific. Mm-hmm. So working with a financial advisor or a financial planner is really important to kind of get you on the right track into retirement.
Yeah, and determining what your costs are going to be. And it's hard to imagine now, of course, but determining how much you should be saving, what percentage of your paycheck and, you know, the different tax advantages and all these different things, working with an advisor is really helpful. And listening to this podcast could be very helpful as well.
Absolutely. And even regarding like the importance of a financial plan and working with a financial planner, like Crystal had mentioned, we actually just did a podcast. We had Becky Sutton and Aaron Wiegman, two of our lead financial planners here at Financial Sense, do a podcast specifically on the importance of why it's really, really crucial to work with a financial advisor and to even just get started with this whole process and just start the conversation about why should I have a financial plan and why do I need to be asking these questions kind of thing, especially early on.
Yeah, and what we kind of came away from that podcast, which everyone should listen to as well, was just it's never too early to start that discussion. It's never too early to start thinking about it. And even if you don't get a plan tomorrow, it's never too early to start examining your finances and kind of saying, okay, where do I sit now? Where do I want to be in the future? And even if you're like, okay, I don't know what house I'll be in specifically, but you know how much your expenses will be, and just starting to get that conversation going, I think is really important.
And along those same lines, it's never too late either. I think a lot of clients of ours sometimes feel like it's too late to do a financial plan. A lot of young people who are in their working years who might be, let's say the average millennial age right now is about 30, they might feel like, okay, well, I'm not 25. I'm not super young anymore. So maybe I'm too late. Maybe I've kind of missed the boat and I don't have enough time to save for retirement. The fact of the matter is it's never too late. I think it's better late than never to work with a financial advisor or a planner to start talking about, you know, what goals you want to achieve and what retirement looks like for you, you know?
Yeah. And I think honestly, the other day I was talking to Aaron, and I think that millennials go through the most changes in life. You graduate college and then you start working your first job, and then you get married, buy your first house, start a family. So many of those things are planning circumstances. So the earlier you start planning, honestly, the better.
So going back to our question, how do you find out how much you're supposed to be saving and how do you figure out what that number is? How do we start that conversation?
It's really an important and very popular question in the whole retirement space. And I think it's also interesting to look at how millennials are doing so far, right? Because this is all answered with saving for retirement. So how many millennials are currently contributing to retirement plans? There was actually a recent study back in 2019 by the Business Insider and Morning Consult Group, and they found that about 45% of millennials are actually saving for retirement. So that's pretty good.
That is.
We're amazing.
Yeah, go millennials.
Which is actually one of the best saving rates among all the living generations currently, which is kind of interesting. And 33% of those same millennials are actively contributing to their retirement savings. So that includes deferring money to their 401ks, that means putting money aside into a traditional IRA, things like that. So that's kind of hopeful, right? Mm-hmm. At least we know that millennials are saving
yes,
money.
Yes, they're starting it.
They'll have some money.
So they're not as bad as most people kind of think they are, which kind of goes against a lot of the stigmas about, you know, our younger generation that they don't save, they spend all their money on avocado toast.
Which we did a podcast dispelling all of those myths, as well as a podcast about tackling student loan debt and credit card debt. So I think we've addressed a lot of the issues that can get in the way of millennials investing and saving for retirement, and not just millennials, but anyone.
Right. But back to the question at hand, Justine, that you asked, I mean, how much will retirement cost? This is a really important question. And so it's important to kind of work backwards. So you ask yourself, how much do I need? We first need to determine how much retirement's going to cost. Mm-hmm. So there's a couple of factors that kind of play into this. And one is, how long do we expect retirement to last? The fact of the matter is that people are living longer, but people are also retiring later in their years. Mm-hmm. They're working longer. So that time horizon is going to really impact that calculation to kind of help determine clients how much they need.
And I think that's something to remember as well, because right now we think about people, and most people retire in their mid-60s. 65 is kind of the go-to age. Some people now 70, but more or less 65. And when I did a retirement calculator that I'd found online, it had me enter in the year I was born and my age and all these other things, and it just automatically assumed that it was going to be, I think, 67 or 68. So it just knows life expectancy is longer. Like, you probably won't be retiring at 65.
Right. And the other consideration that we need to think about when we're talking about this retirement equation, how much do I need for retirement, is also this little thing called inflation. This is something that is a very fundamental principle, but often I think it's overlooked. Because the cost of things that we buy are constantly increasing every year, right? The cost of living is constantly going up. If we were just talking before the podcast even started about, like, how much cars were back in the 1950s versus how much they are now.
Yeah, no, and it's funny because I think that a lot of the times people think that taxes are so bad. But in reality, I think almost inflation is worse.
Yeah. I know. It is, when you don't notice it on a day-to-day or even a year-to-year kind of basis, but when you do look back at how the cost of things have increased over the past 50 years, 20 years even, it really does become kind of apparent, okay, yes, this is most definitely something we need to factor in.
And so over a long time horizon, this can become a silent killer, because if you're not taking care of your money, and what I mean by that is investing, that's part of the reason we invest, is to outpace the rate of inflation. The whole concept is around this idea that a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that's because our money today is actually not being eaten by inflation if we spend it today, right? Or if we invest it today. So the purpose of investing is, again, to outpace that rate of inflation so that hopefully we have more purchasing power by the time we retire and we don't have less. So oftentimes we hear about people joking around about throwing money in their mattress for 30 years and forgetting about it. Well,
yeah,
that money
that.
Is going to be worth half of what it is, you know, 30 years from now kind of thing, than what it is worth today. So inflation is a very, very important factor in this whole retirement equation. And so with that in mind, we have to consider what our required rate of return is going to be in retirement. So this is part of this retirement calculation. How much do I need in retirement? What is retirement going to cost? Well, what kind of return do we need, and what kind of return are we feel comfortable expecting for, say, a 30-year time horizon or a 40-year time horizon? Well, a higher rate of return is going to have a larger margin of error. So if we, yeah, great. I would love to have a 15% rate of return, you know, over a 40-year time horizon. But there's also going to be a lot of risk associated that I'm assuming with a higher rate of return like that.
And so when we're saying rate of return, just to clarify for everyone listening, rate of return means what?
Rate of return is what we return on an investment. So if I save $5,000 and instead of putting it in a bank account, I put it in an investment account, say in the S&P 500, that investment account is going to be worth a different value a year from now than it is worth today. And hopefully it's going to be worth more,
yes.
Right?
Right. And like Josh said, the rate of return, we can as millennials, we have a longer time horizon. So with a higher rate of return comes more risk that you really need to take to get that kind of return. But since we do have a longer horizon, we can take a little bit more risk. Mm-hmm. But that's definitely something to work with your advisor, because if you're not comfortable with it, the risk that you're taking, that's going to be another issue.
Right. And you can determine all of that, how you're 401k is invested, and we can talk about that a little bit later, but just so we're clear on what the rate of return is.
Right, and we don't want to go too far into the weeds with this whole rate of return thing,
but
just know that it's an important factor in this whole retirement equation is what kind of return in the market do you need, because the whole purpose of investing, again, is to outpace that rate of inflation, because inflation over time is going to eat into your purchasing power.
Yeah, and like Josh said, putting it under the mattress, that is a 0% return.
So the other thing we want to talk about too with this whole how much do we need for retirement, how much is it going to cost? We're finally getting to that question. Mm-hmm. So the reality is retirement is probably going to be one of the largest expenses in your lifetime. This is something that most people don't really understand until the closer they get to retirement, they realize, oh, wow, this is really expensive, or this is going to cost a lot.
Yeah, you may think it's a house. It's not.
A house may be your second most expensive thing in your lifetime, but retirement is probably up there.
Or kids.
Ooh,
or,
yeah, those are expensive.
Or children, yes.
Yes.
Sorry, Dad, I was expensive.
I was too.
Yeah, yeah, goes for all of us.
Yeah.
And so like we kind of mentioned earlier too, the cost of retirement is going to be different for everyone. So this really depends on the lifestyle that you desire and also how much you're going to be receiving in retirement, whether it's from a pension or whether it's from Social Security, things like that. So again, those are some of the other things we need to consider. And then we also need to understand how much Social Security is going to provide.
Right. I think everyone has this idea that Social Security will just be entirely gone by the time we are retiring and like not even to factor it in. And it won't be entirely gone, right? I think we were talking about this too when we were planning the program, and it's like, okay, that's not actually the case.
Right. In fact, there was a question we also got from a listener who was asking, well, won't Social Security provide primarily what I need for retirement?
No.
Also not the case. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the reality is like Social Security will only pay for a portion of retirement. And I was actually looking at some statistics regarding people that are currently receiving retirement. It's interesting. Some Americans rely on Social Security for the majority of their retirement income instead of leaning on their own savings. Social Security benefits actually made up 61% of retirement income for elderly beneficiaries, and a third relied on the program for about 90% or more of their income in retirement.
And I think that's interesting because Social Security was put into place to help you in retirement and to help you save for retirement, but not be your primary source of income for retirement.
Right. So this, of course, will probably be a resource for our generation. There's actually a lot of myths and arguments going around that Social Security won't be around. It's going to go bust.
I know. I've definitely heard those as well. Yeah. And it's like, okay, that's not true. But again, like you said, it's not something to go, well, I'll have Social Security, so no need to save. That's not the right mindset either.
So there is a problem with Social Security. And the inherent issue in that is that it looks like the system will be running out of money. The trust funds set up in Social Security will be running out of money by, it's estimated, 2035. This doesn't mean that the system's going to go broke. It just means that the amount saved is going to run out. So therefore, they're going to have to rely 100% on tax revenues coming in to pay the benefits going out.
Exactly. And what I read was what you want to do and to kind of get an idea of what you might actually receive is when it comes time that, or 2035, just to kind of reduce your benefits by 25%, not necessarily it's going to be gone. It's still going to be there, but reduce it by 25%.
Reduce the amount of benefits you think you'll receive.
So it's highly unlikely that Social Security will disappear, but it's very probable that it will look different. So according to the Social Security Administration, if Congress doesn't do anything to fix the Social Security problem, benefits will probably pay 20% less than they do now because of the shortfall that they expect in 2035.
Right. And, you know, as I think a lot of people know, that program wasn't designed to help people for the, you know, 20 years of their life. It was for just a few years. And now that life expectancies have gotten so much higher, it does need a bit of a redesign to figure out how do we make this function and work best for everyone again.
Right. So to say all that is to say, again, there's a number of factors that go into this whole calculation of how much do I need for retirement and how much is retirement going to cost. Like we talked about, it depends on how much we're going to expect to receive from Social Security. It depends on what rate of return we expect in the market. It also depends on what kind of lifestyle we desire. Do we want to live a lifestyle more expensive than what we're living now? Do we expect to live a lifestyle on par with kind of what we're living now? Or do we expect a lifestyle that's going to be maybe just a little bit less than what we're expending now?
Right. And I think also considering lifespan too, which can seem kind of like an odd thing, but it really is true. So there's this thing called the retirement savings gap, which is actually greater than the gender pay gap. And so we all kind of know in working years, women tend to earn 82 cents for every dollar that a man earns. And of course, it's drastically less for women and people of color. But on average, women live 5 years longer than men. And on average, they retire with only 2/3 the money that men do. And Business Insider reported that the typical woman's total retirement income is just 70% of the man's typical retirement income. And that includes Social Security benefits, pension plans, savings, and any other sources of income. Despite the fact that 2/3 of U.S. families, women represent the sole or co-breadwinners. So it's also just important to think, okay, because this one retirement calculator says I'll need this much, maybe you actually need more because you'll be living maybe 5 years longer. Or who knows, by the time we're retiring, we could be living 10 years longer. Like,
right.
So much will change, I think, by the time 2060 hits or even further than that, that it is important to really consider how long you'll be living in retirement and the kind of lifestyle, again, that you want to live.
Yeah, and then you take into account the pink tax, and we're just all around in trouble.
Yeah. Important things to consider and most definitely be aware of. After we figure out that these are all the things to be aware of, you know, rate of return, inflation, these are really important factors to make sure we're taking into account for how much we'll need when that retirement date comes. But how do we get down into like the actual detail, like the nitty gritty? What do we need to do? How do we set up our retirement accounts to make sure that we're setting ourselves up for success when we get to retire and live our best retired life?
So we all know me, and we all know that I am obsessed with Roth, anything Roth, tax-free, it's me.
Yes, make sure you listen to Crystal's podcast she did back in June with Jim, and they talked all about why IRAs are crucial tax retirement investment vehicles.
Mm-hmm. We also call Crystal the Roth queen.
I am. That is what I'm known for here. Basically, I love Roth. I'm okay with paying the taxes now. Right now, the tax rates are just so low that I'm okay. I'm totally fine with paying taxes. But in the future, I don't want to have to pay taxes anymore. So I want to set myself up to be tax-free in retirement. And I think three of the most important investment vehicles to really set yourself up for that is a Roth 401k account, a Roth IRA account, and an HSA account. And I'm going to go into further detail with the HSA, but for now, I'm going to move on past that for a little bit.
And we do want to give a few quick definitions of just what these accounts are, and then we're going to link out to articles that have a little bit more in-depth information about all the different kinds of rules and regulations that are in play with those.
Right. So for a millennial who maybe isn't aware, how would you describe a 401k?
A 401k, just what I think everyone seems to be most common with, a 401k is an employer-sponsored retirement plan. So you must have a job with a company that offers this benefit in order to participate. So, and not all companies offer one. You also have traditional and Roth 401ks. So the traditional 401k is what we just talked about. And then there's also a Roth 401k. And the difference between them is when you pay taxes. So with a Roth, you're paying taxes now. And the idea is that you'll have a lower tax rate when you're younger than when you're older and presumably earning more money. And with a traditional 401k account, you're paying taxes when you take that money out in retirement. And then there's an IRA, which technically stands for an individual retirement arrangement, but most people say account. And then this is something that you're setting up for yourself. So if your company doesn't offer a 401k or if you want to get the additional tax benefits. And there are great tax advantages in these accounts, but there are also limits on how much you can contribute and how much you make. So for most millennials, you'll be able to contribute unless you're someone who's very lucky and already earning lots and lots of money. But we'll link out to something that explains these accounts in a little bit more detail, but just as a basic kind of idea, those are the different accounts we'll be talking about.
Yeah. And so with what's nice about the Roth 401k is there are no income limitations. I would always go with a Roth 401k, but once you make over a certain amount and you're pushed into a higher tax bracket, sometimes the Roth 401k doesn't make as much sense as going for a traditional 401k. But if you are underneath within the 24% bracket, contribute to a Roth 401k. It's so smart. So for the HSA, I am going to go into further detail, but for now, there are no income limitations. It's basically a tax advantage medical savings account available to taxpayers who are in high deductible health plans. And I'll go into that later as well. But individuals, you can set it up with an insurance company, a bank, or an investment company. I know Fidelity offers HSA accounts. And the nice thing about it is those funds roll over every single year. So the amount that you put in, the idea is you put, say if you're single, it's $3,550. You invest that into this HSA account. And if you don't use it, you roll it over. Or it's more a pay your medical expenses out of your pocket and then keep on letting those funds roll over and build and compound. But again, like I said, get into that later. The idea for me behind saving right now and paying the taxes now is, so back in 2017, the 25% tax bracket directly related to the 22% tax bracket now. So in 2017, if you were a single filer, you can make up to $91,900 and be in the 25% bracket. Josh, I know you wanted to talk about 22 and 24 right now for the brackets.
Yeah, like you kind of mentioned earlier, Crystal, Roths only make sense for some people. So Roths aren't the overall answer for everybody. It really depends on your income situation because you don't want to trigger unnecessary taxes. And that's kind of the whole idea with having the option of a Roth or a traditional, because the beautiful thing with a traditional IRA, for example, or a traditional 401k for a high income earner is they can defer their income and get their taxable income lower today and defer some of those taxes later. So say that you make $300,000 a year and you can defer some of that income and you're going to be at a lower income in retirement, then it just makes sense, right? Because you're paying less taxes overall. At least hopefully, we would hope that by the time you're retired, that tax rates maybe aren't significantly higher than what they are now.
Right. You can actually go up to, as a single filer, $163,300. In 2020 to be in that 24% bracket. And then if you're married filing jointly, you can go up to $326,600 to be in that 24% bracket.
Right.
And that means that if you are at those salaries or lower, then you can contribute to the Roth.
Not the Roth. So if you're within that 24% bracket, then continue to pay into your Roth 401k. But a Roth IRA is a little bit different because there are income limitations. So if you were to contribute to a Roth IRA, you couldn't make, as a single filer, you couldn't make more than $139,000. And that's the highest point of the phase out. And for a married filing jointly, you couldn't make more than $206,000.
So the numbers for a Roth 401k were what?
So if you want to contribute to a Roth 401k, you should be in that 24% tax bracket. So stay under, as a single person, $163,300. And then for a married filing jointly, stay under $326,600.
And one of the primary differences between a Roth 401k and Roth IRA is that the 401k doesn't have those income limitations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just to kind of clarify for listeners.
Yeah, so if you still want to contribute to a Roth 401k, you totally can if you're in a higher tax bracket. It's just I would work with a financial advisor to see if it makes as much sense.
Right.
Sometimes it does because you can take that deduction and it's so much better for your taxes.
Right,
and I think if you're able to, working with that advisor can really help, because if you're like me and you start hearing these tax brackets, I'm like, wait, what was that again? I need a pen. I need to write this down. What was that? So it really is when you have someone like Crystal and Josh or any advisor who knows what they're doing, it's like, oh my gosh, they opened so many doors to all these different things that you're like, I didn't know I could do that. So it really does pay, truly, if you're able to work with an advisor who can kind of help you sift through all of these tax rules and regulations and all of these different things. But also, these accounts aren't exclusive. So you could have multiple accounts. You could do, what, a Roth 401k and something else in addition to that, right?
Yeah. So what I'm saying is have the Roth 401k, have the Roth IRA, and have the HSA. If you can afford to really contribute to all those, you could actually set yourself up for being tax-free or close to tax-free in retirement, which we'll go into my case study later. But I mean, it's just so important. And so right now, like the big thing for me is I want to pay my taxes now while I'm in a lower tax bracket underneath the or within the 24% tax bracket or lower, because in 2025, these rules, these changes are going to sunset and most likely taxes are going to go up. So again, at that point, I'm probably going to have to reevaluate my life and see where we're at tax-wise situation. But it's just for now, that's what I want to do. I want to set myself up to be tax-free in retirement. Right.
So baked in the cake, like you were saying, Crystal, we already know that taxes are going to sunset, meaning they're going to revert back to the old rules they were in 2017. And in addition, what isn't baked in the cake, but is probably probable, is if we get perhaps another president in November or another 4 years from now, we could have another administration that wants to hike tax rates up for most Americans. And that will obviously change our taxable income, how much we take home after taxes. That will affect a lot of things.
Exactly.
So another question that we received was, how does rolling over a 401k from an old job work? Can I put it in my new 401k account or can it go into a separate account? And I think that is, I've heard from a lot of people, friends, that's a big question because especially for millennials, we're switching jobs more frequently than generations before us. And so you will perhaps have a 401k from one job and then you move to another job. Well, what do you do with that old account?
So a couple things. You should really ask to see if you can transfer your 401k into your current employer 401k account. A lot of the times, if they allow it within the plan, you can actually do that. So talk to your HR, see if that's possible. It's probably the smartest way to go about it. If you don't have that option, then you can roll it over into, if it's a traditional 401k, you can roll it over into a traditional IRA. You can convert it actually to a Roth. But make sure you keep those funds completely separate each time because there's so many advantages and protections that is offered by keeping those funds separate. So just don't commingle them.
So keeping them separate meaning what?
So the nice things about 401ks is there's creditor protection. So anything that you put into a 401k is protected from people trying to sue you and take money from you. So it's a huge advantage. And so if you do have to roll it over into a traditional IRA, if you keep those funds separate, Yeah, 100% of it is exempt. And if you can prove that it came from a 401k rollover, they can't touch that.
Making sure that you're not transferring it into a savings account or something else, making sure you're keeping it in a retirement account.
Definitely don't transfer it into a savings account. You will definitely get taxed heavily on it, especially if you're younger. There will be a penalty and they will automatically withhold 20% if you distribute it into your savings.
So definitely don't do that.
Wait till you're 59 and a half.
Yep.
To take it.
Yeah. I know, Crystal, you mentioned earlier in this podcast HSAs, and I think a lot of millennials don't really understand what an HSA is.
I definitely did not know what an HSA was until Crystal started telling me about them.
Or at least how it works and the benefits of having one. So you want to go into that for a second?
Yes. So there's two different types of medical savings accounts. There's the FSA and then there's the HSA. The FSA works a little bit differently because it's pre-tax money that goes into an account. There's a lower amount of money that you can actually put into an FSA. And if you don't use the funds, you lose them. There's no option to roll those funds over for the next year. It's done.
So you have to use those funds in a year?
Yes, within a year that you actually contribute into the FSA account. If you have an HSA, you put that fund in so you can contribute, like I said, for a single person, you can contribute up to $3,550. And if you're family, so married filing jointly, you can contribute $7,100 for 2020. And then also there's catch-up provisions. If you're over 55, you can do an extra $1,000.
And so then what did FSA and HSA stand for?
Flexible Savings Account and then Health Savings Account.
So are there advantages to either of those kind of over the other?
Yeah, so both of them definitely have advantages because you do get to use that pre-tax money to pay for your medical expenses. But the HSA is just, in my opinion and most people's opinion, so much better because you have a higher contribution limit. You can roll over those funds. So the idea is, like I said before, to really put that money in this account, set it, forget it, pay it with out-of-pocket expenses. The nice thing about this is for an HSA, like I said, it has to be a high deductible health plan. So the thing with a high deductible health plan is that it has lower premiums. So your premiums are going to be lower, but it requires an insurer to pay a high deductible. So you have to meet your deductible before insurance will kick in. So the deductible actually has to, for a single person, has to be greater than $1,400, but there is a max out of pocket. So if you were to go over your deductible, insurance starts to kick in, but then also they won't allow you to spend anything more than your max out of pocket. So to give you an example of a client that I was working with, when I looked at his health plan, he had a deductible that for a single person was $2,000. So he had to meet that deductible first. And then the max out of pocket was $5,500, which is kind of high, fairly high. But once you hit that $5,500, you will not have to pay anything more out of pocket for that year. And like I said, you can tap into the HSA account if you can't afford to pay all of that out of, you know, the funds that you have in your pocket. But if you're a young, healthy person and you're not going to the doctor or you're not going to the hospital or it's just a fluke thing, this thing is such a great advantage to have for you because you can just build that come retirement.
So in practice, if we take that example of your client, Crystal, let's say that he had a $6,000 HSA and he had to pay a deductible of, in your example, I think it was $2,000. So he has to pay a $2,000 deductible, and then he has expenses outside of that $2,000 deductible that went all the way up to, say, $5,500 in total. Well, he could use his HSA and take all that money out tax-free to cover those medical expenses, and so he wouldn't actually have to pay out of pocket.
Exactly, and that's what's so nice about it is you have that money. If you want to tap into it, you can. But also if you do have the funds outside, so if you have that emergency saving account that you can dip into and just let this, you actually can invest this money into index funds. There's a lot, once you get an HSA, you can kind of look into what funds you have available, but it's, you could let it compound and grow. And just the advantages of course, compounding, like we've talked about before, is just so important come retirement because especially with inflation, like it's going to hit you hard. And to have this tax-free money.
Especially medical expenses.
Right. Exactly.
And also, so it sounds like if you are someone who is healthy or who doesn't need to go to the doctor that frequently, the HSA almost is like a secret retirement account that you're saving also.
Exactly. And the thing is, the earnings, those are tax preferred. You don't have to worry. They're tax. When you take the money out, it's tax free. And just everything about this account makes it tax free if it's going to medical or qualified medical expenses. And down the road, when we start needing long-term care insurance, you can actually use the HSA to pay for the premiums for those long-term care expenses. It's just such a great investment vehicle for any type of medical expenses that come up down the road.
And then just to clarify, that money does need to go toward health expenses, but everyone's pretty positive by the time we age, everyone will need to spend more money on healthcare expenses. So
yeah, if you never go to the doctor, tell me your secrets.
That was an excellent tip. And I know when Crystal first was telling me about HSAs, I was like, I have never heard of that before. Wow. And so we've gone over a lot of different things, lots of information-packed examples and really great tips of how to kind of start saving for retirement. And I think now, Crystal and Josh, can you guys share some of your case studies of clients that you've worked with and how you've actually put all of these really cool accounts and different tax saving tips into practice?
Yeah, of course. And I think this is kind of now finally getting to the question we've been trying to answer this whole podcast is like, okay, so we've talked about retirement. We've talked about what retirement costs. Now, how do we determine how much we need to save? So I'm actually currently working with a close friend of mine doing some retirement planning. He's in his mid-20s. He's working for a tech company. He's making really good income. And he's like, well, how do I start saving for this thing called retirement? Yep. I want to someday own a house. You know, I want to buy a car. How do I put all this together kind of thing, you know? Yep. And so I'm actually doing a financial plan with him. But one of his specific questions was about retirement. So how much do I need and how much should I start saving? So this was a case study I kind of wanted to build with a couple different scenarios and a couple different examples to show the differences of why it's important to start early and to really determine how much your retirement is going to cost. So for this example, I took a 25-year-old person, we'll call him Steve, and he's going to retire at 65. We'll just use that for example's sake, and he's going to live to age 90. That's a pretty average kind of life expectancy right now. And let's say, for example's sake, that he makes $100,000 a year right now, which is probably pretty close to what we're talking. And his replacement rate in retirement, so this is a ratio that we use in financial planning lingo, which basically means how much of your current income do you expect to need replacing when you retire? So if you make $100,000 and your replacement ratio is 50%, that means that you expect to need about $50,000 in retirement to cover your living costs and your goals and your lifestyle.
I would also like to be Steve and learn his secrets of how he's already making
$100,000. So he's a millennial that's obviously doing very well, yes, right, for himself. And his goal is to start saving. And so he's wondering, how do I start and how much do I need to achieve the lifestyle that I want to live? Well, he's got a couple options. I mean, one is, what kind of lifestyle do you desire in retirement? If he's someone that wants to live it up, and let's say that he wants a replacement ratio of 125%. So not only does he want to spend $100,000 in retirement in today's dollars, but he wants to spend $25,000 more. He wants to live it up. He wants to go on vacations. He wants to buy a nice car. He wants to go to skiing trips every winter that are really expensive.
And it makes sense because you have so much more free time.
Right.
So I relate to Steve. I think I want to be a Steve. Yeah.
So with those in mind, what I've been talking with him about is, well, here's the reality. The cost of retirement with 125% of your income being replaced in retirement would cost about $1.3 million today. So if he was to retire right now, he would need about $1.3 million to last him those 30 years in retirement.
And that was with the 125% replacement rate?
Correct. And assuming, of course, I should have disclosed my assumptions, I'm using a 6% rate of return, a 3% rate of inflation, Social Security, he's receiving about $25,000 a year. So assuming all of those, he would need about 1.3 today.
And we're going to post Josh's case study and Crystal's as well online so you guys can follow along with it too, because I'm looking at it on a piece of paper right now and it's really useful to kind of see all these things that Josh has outlined and that Crystal will outline as well. So make sure to look at financialsense.com because we'll post those there.
And so in addition to this 1.3, let's say that he doesn't want to live it up and he's comfortable with the lifestyle he is now. That retirement in today's dollars would actually only cost about $970,000. So from 1.3 to 970, there's a little bit of a difference there. Let's say that he doesn't need all that money in retirement. He actually can only live off of $75,000 is what he wants to his income to be replaced. And then with his Social Security, his net retirement need is really only $50,000. Well, he would need today about only $650,000 to cover the cost of retirement if he was to retire today.
And would you say that odds are like a 75%, I mean, obviously it's different for everyone, but a 75% replacement rate is kind of a good one to aim for if you're trying to pick, because maybe you'll have a house that's paid off or some of your expenses like work clothes and commuting maybe won't be as high?
That's a great question. I think the reality is replacement rates today are probably much lower on average. I would say around maybe 50% or lower. That's because, like we mentioned earlier, almost a third of people that have retired today are depending on Social Security for 90% of their income. So they really don't need much else outside of what Social Security is already paying for. So we're kind of talking about people that they want to spend more, they want a greater lifestyle in retirement.
Okay, yeah, right? That's definitely good to keep in mind of just what these kind of replacement rates mean, because I think that's a really important thing to consider when you're trying to figure out what your number is.
And that was kind of the whole point of this case study, was to show you if you, depending on your lifestyle, that's really going to determine how much you need in retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I want to be tax-free or as close to being tax-free as possible in retirement. So my case study is a little bit different. All of my investment vehicles that I mentioned are going to be tax-free investment vehicles come retirement. I basically took my assumptions right now. Same as Josh, the real rate of return is 5.82%. So that takes into account investments being annualized through the S&P at 9% and then inflation at 3%. So your real rate of return is 5.82. I think Josh used 5.825, which you will see, but I used 5.82. So we're pretty close here. But like I said, I kind of wanted to go in a normal kind of millennial setting as to a normal income. And so last time we talked, I had talked about graduating from college and using the National Association of College and Employers starting salary when you graduate. So for 2019, it went up to close to $55,000. It was a little bit over. So I took an income of $55,000, and then I have this person in, they're single right now, so they're, you know, they're a young millennial, and they start contributing to an HSA. So that automatically actually gets deducted from your gross income. So they are contributing $3,550 to the HSA, and then they get their normal standard deduction at $12,400. Mm-hmm. So their taxable income, which was really cool, ended up being $39,050. Now, if you weren't contributing to an HSA right now, you actually would have been in the 22%. But because they are contributing to, or 22% tax bracket, but because they are contributing to the HSA, it bumped them down to the 12% tax bracket.
When I saw that in Crystal's case study, I was like, oh my goodness, you can actually change your tax bracket simply by contributing to this account. That was major.
Mm-hmm. Because it actually deducts to get to your AGI, which is really your taxable income.
Right.
And the AGI is your adjusted gross income. So that's really what you're getting taxed on. So the take-home pay after taxes, I won't get into all those numbers. You will see it once Justine posts it with this podcast. But the take-home pay with the HSA would give you about $41,053. Monthly income at $3,421, again, if you're making $55,000 gross. So then I took, of course, we want to contribute to the Roth 401k. So I took 10% going into the Roth 401k. So that's 10% of your salary would be $5,500 if you're making $55,000. So now your take-home pay is really $35,553 because, again, that's after-tax money going into this Roth 401k. And your monthly take-home expenses would be $2,962.75. So now if you can cover your fixed expenses, your rent, your utilities, your food, gas, any debt payments that you have, like Justine just said, credit cards, and you have a sufficient emergency fund. Again, that's 3 to 6 months worth of expenses for you, normal expenses. That would equate for a person making $55,000, $9,000 to $18,000 in a saving liquid account, right? Very important to have this emergency fund before you start really contributing to other types of investment vehicles. Because if you were to lose the job or something horrible happens, you want that readily available. Yes. So make sure you have that covered. Now, if you're one of those people like me, I like to max out my savings as much as possible. So now I have them contributing to a Roth IRA, because in the $55,000 world making in gross income, you still can contribute to the Roth IRA. So they're maxing it out at $500 a month. So now their real take-home pay that they have in their pocket that they can put towards their expenses is $2,462.75. If you're living with roommates, if you have lower expenses, it should be very, very doable. Fast forward 40 years. Say nothing happens. Your income doesn't even increase, okay? Well, this is a point in time, right? So if your income increases, that is so fantastic. You really should hope for that. And it definitely will. But I'm just saying, in this snapshot of time, if you are still to be able to contribute to the HSA at this like lower amount, it does increase for inflation. It has in the past.
So we're saying if you are about to retire, odds are things will have changed. But I think this is, if nothing changes, this is how much you'll have by the time you retire.
Exactly. So basically, like I said, S&P averaging about 9%, your real rate of return after inflation at 5.82%. If you continue to make the monthly payments to your Roth 401k at, you know, the $5,500 over a year, but you're contributing monthly with the compounding effect, you would have around $870,000 in today's dollars in a Roth 401k. And the Roth IRA, with making monthly payments of $500, it would be around $950,000. And in the HSA, with monthly payments of $279.17, that would equate to $530,000. All of that money is tax-free. So you're almost over $2 million in tax-free money, which is huge. And once, you know, you turn 59 and a half, you can touch all that money tax-free. But the coolest thing about this, too, is if you do have all of this money in tax-free, when you get Social Security, if you have $0 reportable income because you're withdrawing from these tax-free investment vehicles, your Social Security could actually be tax-free as well, or very close to tax-free. You might be a little bit above, but that could literally actually set you up to be tax-free in retirement, which is my plan.
So Crystal is setting us all up for a successful tax-free retirement filled with lots of vacation skiing with Steve.
Now, obviously...
Skiing with Steve.
Yes, exactly. So obviously, your income is most likely going to go up, so it's not going to stay here. So again, continue working with a financial advisor and really kind of reevaluate where you are. This is in a snapshot in time. This is not very reliable because things are going to change. Circumstances are going to change. You might not be able to contribute the $500 to your Roth IRA that month. I mean, things happen. So really continue to work with an advisor because this is not, I mean, this could be a situation that could happen, but things are going to change and you're going to make more. Don't stay at $55,000 just so you can be tax-free in retirement.
An excellent point, and that's one that Aaron Wiegman actually brought up in last week's podcast on the importance of a financial plan. And that really is, it's important to understand the majority of the time, a financial plan is going to be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The only thing that you can count on is change.
Yeah.
And that's because, like you said, Crystal, so many things are going to be changing as we might get raises, mm-hmm. we might get a layoff, we might have to use our emergency fund to buy a new roof on our house.
Yeah.
And I think that brings up a quick question, too, that I wanted to address. So let's say you still have you're a new millennial, just started working. You still have a little bit of high interest debt, credit card debt, not a lot, but you still have a little bit that you're trying to pay off. And you are halfway there with your emergency fund. Should you start saving for retirement?
Emergency fund is by far the most important thing to have on hand. If you don't have that adequate emergency fund, you should put your money towards that first. And if you have debt, you need to focus on paying off the debt as well. And there's so many things that you can do with having credit card debt or just any type of debt, student loan debt. Work with somebody, a financial planner, to really evaluate what you need to prioritize in your life. But again, that emergency fund is one of the most important things to have.
Yeah, it's a great point to bring
up. Make sure to listen to the podcast that Crystal and Josh did and that Crystal and I did. We have a few on different ways to tackle that debt as well. But anyway, you were saying.
Yeah, well, just to answer your question, I would say debt works against you, mm-hmm. especially credit card debt. Mm-hmm. So before you even consider investing, debt works completely against you. So it's really important to tackle that debt head on and to get out of debt first before you start contributing for retirement.
Yeah. And remember, compounding works both ways. So debt is the negative way. You really don't want that because that is not fun. Compounding and investing is great because you see your accounts grow so fast. But with debt, your account balances grow so fast and you don't want that.
The wrong direction.
Yeah, in the wrong direction.
Okay.
So one last example, just trying to get to the bottom of this whole question. So we've talked about Roths, we've talked about how to live tax-free, we've talked about how much retirement costs, 1.3 in today's dollars if you really want to live it up, for example's sake. So let's just real quickly talk about what it costs to save each month, depending on what time you start, right? So this is kind of what I've been talking with my friend Steve about, is if you started at 25, Steve, this is how much you would need to save each month if you wanted a retirement that costs X. Mm-hmm. If you started 10 years later, here's what that retirement would cost each month, you know? So the example that I used in the previous case study we kind of talked about, I just assumed that we want to maintain the same standard of living in retirement. So let's say he's making $100,000 in his last couple of years, and he retires and he wants to continue making $100,000. But Social Security is going to provide $25,000, so he really only needs $75,000 from his investments a year. Right? Follow me so far?
Yes.
And assuming a 6% rate of return, inflation is 3%, so the real rate of return right, is around 6%. If he were to start saving at 25 years old, he would need to shell away about $650 a month. That could go into a Roth 401k. That could go into a Roth IRA, as long as he doesn't hit that maximum contribution limit. The best way to save that would probably be into a Roth 401k, right? And then maybe get an employer match because it's free money.
Free money.
Now, remember with the employer match, that part is going to be pre-tax. So
correct.
Later on in life, maybe do some Roth conversions, get it back into that Roth account.
Right. And going back to this example, let's say that he started at age 35. The amount he would need to save each month would actually be double what he would have to save at 25.
So if you're able to, it really pays to start saving as early as you can.
To get to that same place in retirement of having about, let's call it $970,000, he would need to save about $1,300 a month just to get to the same place if he was starting at 25. Now, if he's 45, so sorry, folks, but the problem just gets, or the amount he needs to save just gets greater. He would need to save almost $3,000 a month starting at age 45.
Let's hope he's making a lot more than $100,000 a year if he's saving that much a month.
So the point in that whole example is it's really important to start as early as you can, which is a very cliche thing to say as a financial planner, but it's very important.
But there's a reason it's a cliche.
Yeah.
It's true. And again, I'll be sure to post Crystal and Josh's case studies online because, again, I just think it's really useful to kind of look at these and then almost use it as kind of an example of how you want to start planning for your own retirement. And so I know this was a rather long Millennial Monday podcast, but that's because retirement and saving for retirement is a really complex issue. And it's not the most fun thing to do all the time. Kind of, I was reading a few articles and it was equating it to running on a treadmill or flossing, like not things that are terribly fun to do now, but you're for the better for doing, right? So much better for doing it. So there are important things to consider. And, you know, if you're able to, again, talking to a financial advisor, talking to a financial planner really can make all the difference. And you can have someone like Crystal or Josh helping you work on your retirement account. If anyone has any questions, because I know we went over a whole lot of things today, how can they get in contact?
Right. So they can email me at crystal.kessler@financialsense.com, or you can call into the toll-free number at 888-486-3939.
Or they can contact myself at the office at our toll-free number, which Crystal already mentioned, or my email address, which is josh.nunn@financialsense.com. And I do just want to remind listeners, again, it's never too late and it's never too early to start that conversation. The best thing you can do is at least just start. So you may feel like you're already behind. You may feel like retirement is already past, right? Where you could have started saving. It's never too late. It's always best to just start a conversation and to see what things you can do to get to where you want to be and to achieve the things you want to achieve.
I totally agree. And if anyone wants to reach out to me to commiserate on how confusing this can feel sometimes, you can reach me at justine.hall, so justine.hall@financialsense.com.
And if you have any specific questions about this podcast,
yes,
you can call our Q line number at 1-833-ASK-FSN.
Or you can go to the contact us button on financialsense.com, send us an email there, I'll get it. We love getting questions from listeners, feedback. All of these questions came from friends of the show, listeners of the show who had questions, and we love answering those. And it's pretty cool for everyone listening to get some great advice from Crystal and Josh, because I know I have learned so much from sitting next to them and learning about this stuff too.
Well, with that in mind, we're out of time. Until Millennial Monday's return, we hope you have a pleasant week.
Happy Monday.
See ya. Woo!
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.